Hey, it's Austin James. If you're like me, trying to live your best life while living with diabetes, you can relate to worrying if you're doing a good job managing your diabetes. I use the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor to get real-time glucose readings and see the impact of every meal and activity to make better decisions. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor can help me live life with diabetes on my own terms, and it gives me more time for the things I love, like being a dad and a musician. Now this is progress. Learn more at FreeStyleLibre.us.
For prescription only, safety info found at FreeStyleLibre.us.
Hey, welcome back everyone to the channel. Tonight we have a special park ranger story about this guy who reached out to his grandfather who was a prior park ranger from the 1980s, and he has some interesting tales that he wants to share with us. Stay tuned. If you're new to the channel, subscribe, click on that bell, and smash that thumbs up and tell a friend. Hi, Zach. First off, I want to say I love your videos and stories. I love listening to your park ranger and woods narrations as I go to sleep. My grandpa has lived a really cool life, and his experiences with the woods are really interesting since he used to be a park ranger. I talked him into writing something I could send you. I hope you enjoy, and I hope my grandpa gets on your channel. He'll have no idea what it means, but it'll be fun to listen to. Here's what he sent me. From 1980 through 1992, I worked as a park ranger in Yosemite National Park in California. As someone who grew up in Boston, I can't say that I've ever experienced more natural beauty than I did in that place. I remember it taking a good few months for it to sink in that my job was roaming such a landscape. Sometimes alone with nothing but nature and my admiration for the wilderness around me. Even the fellas I worked with were great guys. When a bad day in the office involves bear scares and missing hikers, rather than faulty computers and annoying managers, you build a pretty solid bond with those who can relate. There are some great stories to tell people who haven't worked a similar job. Then there's some we all just decide to keep to ourselves when we can. I'm assuming those are the ones my grandson wants me to write about. The mindset I left Yosemite with was one that couldn't compare to any job before. The Marines taught me how to load and shoot a gun. The police force taught me the laws of my country. Yosemite taught me that if something doesn't have an explanation, the frustration of not knowing could be better than the regret of finding out. I don't even think I was a year into my job when the park gave me my first thing to think about at night. When I first started, all I really did was write reports of what other rangers had dealt with throughout the day. In all honesty, we were heavily overstaffed. I honestly thought that would be my life for the next few years, for many had started before me, and they were the ones that got the deal with all the more hands-on side of the job. I almost felt guilty about my relief looking back, but I can't deny that my excitement outweighed my confusion when so many rangers started quitting. I had never seen anything like it while working. Around 2 people a week handing in their notice with little or no reason. Every one of them doing the job I wanted. In hindsight, that should have been one of the things I thought about at night. After just about a month, I was being asked to head out into the woods and the wilderness with the big boys. I loved it. It reminded me of the police force, just less paranoia, harassment, and more walking. My first jobs were giving visitors a brief history of the park and general upkeep. In daytime, general upkeep was litter picking and repairing benches. Sometimes cleaning up after drunk kids. It was the late night and early morning shifts that made my job harder. I got my new rota about a month after leaving the office report side of things. Every week was a different time. Some through the night, some ended in the evening, some ended when the rest of the rangers were having lunch. Me and my buddy Kevin had similar hours, so we often worked together. We ventured out into the night on foot together for the first time on my second day into a late shift. It was about 11 p.m., and I wasn't that far off from clocking out. Kev had the whole night to go. We were made aware of some campers who had essentially been a-holes all day. obnoxious and littering on the trails, and apparently they were camping not far off the path. Me and Kevin were going to set the ground rules and hopefully scare them into cleaning up after themselves and make sure they weren't burning the park down or anything. It was only about a 3 to 5 minute walk off road, but that's all we needed. Mine and Kevin's flashlight were leaping around each other's when I heard it. The best way I could word it is it sounded like I was downstairs in a wood cabin, and the gentle thud of a child's footsteps were pattering above me. It sounded just as a toddler running across the floorboards. I remember jolting my flashlight upwards when I heard it, and being surprised that Kevin didn't do the same. I looked at him in confusion. "What the F was that?" I asked him. Kevin had worked at Yosemite a few years longer than me, so he just looked me up and down and responded, "Don't worry about it. Nothing that we could get paid for, so just keep moving, man." We found those campers. We gave them a telling off, and of course they still left a bunch of ash and beer cans the next day. That wasn't part of the journey that bothered me, however. I spent the next few days thinking about those footsteps. And after a few more journeys into the wilderness, I kept being reminded of why I did. I can't describe it to anyone who hasn't experienced it. There's so many mixed emotions when you're dealing with being isolated, yet having uninvited and unwanted company. I even asked my boss about it, a 30-year veteran in the business. All he could tell me was, "The wilderness is unpredictable. Keep your composure when you're out there and your head down when it needs to be. And don't worry about anything else." Needless to say, I found no comfort in this. I had to work with those noises for months. My work ethic would battle my nerves daily. I was just trying to be good at my job, while the obvious sound of adolescents sprinting tapping above me. It was horrible. It doesn't sound it, but when such an occurrence follows you every day with no one there to offer you peace, it gets to you. It almost became unbearable until it stopped. Just like that. Nothing. I'd suffer for almost a half a year, then it went silent. It took a while, but things began feeling normal again. I had a good few months at Yosemite. Then, during a shift with Kevin, things changed. I remember hearing his radio, but being too far away to make out what he or those on the other end were saying. He approached me with a solemn look on his face before asking me a bizarre question. "You good with dead bodies?" I told him about my time in the Marines and assured him I'd be okay. I was preparing for a missing hiker being found or a bear attack. I was wrong. "Follow me, man. Need to show you the hangar's tree." At that moment, I had a brief idea of what had taken place. I was surprised by Kevin's lack of sensitivity, but not unused to it after my time in the war and police force. At first I thought, "hangar's tree" was him referring to where the body was going to be found. Like a lot of assumptions at Yosemite, that was incorrect. It had been a while since I had seen such a sight, but I knew how to keep my composure. Poor bastard was still swinging slightly, and the winds had been calm that day, so I assumed it was recent. All the branches at Yosemite creak in the wind, but the one the man was hung on just seemed to moan louder under the pressure of the rope in his body. It took about 4 of us to get him down. We got his body to the nearest trail where emergency services were waiting. As they took him away, I turned to Kevin and made a comment. "Ain't gonna lie, hope that isn't a daily occurrence." Kevin didn't even take his eyes off the body leaving as he responded. "Not daily. Yearly more like it. Well, half yearly. Is that what you call it?" he replied. "What?" I turned to face him. He didn't do the same. "The hangar's tree. We get about 2 of those a year. Same tree, same branch. Frickin' weird." Kevin finally looked at me and acknowledged my confusion. "I don't know, man. Apparently it's always been like that." "Must just be the right kind of spot you look for when you're gonna, you know, do that." Kevin patted me on the shoulder before heading back to his patrol. "Don't worry about it." "Don't worry about it?" all I had was things to worry about and a horde of coworkers telling me not to worry about it? Maybe I shouldn't have, but Kevin was right. About 8 months later, another body was found. Same tree, same branch. I felt uncomfortable when passing the tree from then on, even when nothing was wrong with it. That one branch just seemed to croak and groan louder than all the others, almost like it was calling for its next victim. I did my best to avoid it. Not long after the second body, the footsteps above returned. I started understanding all the other rangers. The discomfort from before had gone. After what I had seen in those woods, strange sounds stopped being the priority. I just got used to them. We even started joking about them back at HQ, little Danny. I hear how insane it sounds now, but it was just the normal back then. We'd talk about how little Danny was mad on the days the footsteps pounded louder. I shudder at the memory now, yet I treated them like snapping twigs or bird songs at the time. I became what Kevin is to me. We had gotten new starters, and I'd have to shrug off the noises and explain the hangar's tree to them the same way I heard it. Those are the stories I tell at family reunions after a few drinks to cause some scares, or reminisce about my old coworkers whenever we manage to get back in contact. These are the instances we don't talk about much. But for the sake of my grandson and all those who bothered to listen this far, I'll share. I remember heading to the lake one day late in the evening. The lake would attract canoeing, swimming, and partying all in a day. This made it a hot spot for littering, damage, and just about any other mess I was paid to clean up or report. I arrived there as the sun had almost completely disappeared below the horizon, but there was still enough day for me to see without a flashlight. There was no sign of damage by those who had canoed, no disturbance from those who had swam, not even litter from an abandoned party. That would have been good news if that's all I had to report. All across the sand, pebbles, and dirt by the lake were hundreds, if not thousands, of footprints. The outlines of human feet, all heading towards the water, not a single one facing any other direction. The ground wasn't even disturbed in any way, just calm, consistent steps, all heading into the waves before fading. I could see they weren't aged. It was like they were made minutes prior. I talked to my coworkers about it, and they were adamant that there was no sign nor reason to believe that anyone had been in that area for days. My human side spiraled with the thoughts and an unnerved feeling sat in my gut, but the side of me Yosemite had created went to its usual solution. You don't get paid to find an explanation. That was that. I wasn't the only person going through this, however. Plenty of people who started before and after me would ask about things they heard at night. Lenny, a quiet guy that I worked with, actually refused to head out at night again unless we all agreed to only shout each other's names in a certain tone when out in the woods. He said that he was out there with another ranger and heard someone scream for help in the woods. They both followed the sound, and though they did not split up, so to speak, they checked separate places where they were out of each other's sight, but still a shout away. Lenny swore to God that he heard his buddy shout his name several times, some of the calls sounding hysteric and panicked. Yet when they met up again, he said he never even called for him. Strange part is, none of us even laughed at him or put up a fight. We just agreed to using this higher or lower tone when shouting each other. There wasn't an ounce of doubt in any of our minds that Lenny was telling the truth. I bet these are the stories the other guys are still hiding. I actually had the awful privilege of working at Yosemite when a new reoccurrence began. We called it the ghost car. Loads of fellas started radio in every few days talking about this old car they'd see going down the dirt roads. It only ever passed, though. Apparently, it was one of those real old-timey Fords, the kind you see in those classic war movies. It had its headlights beaming, just slow rattling along the road. Some boys said they got close to it and they couldn't see anyone inside. I don't ever recall getting close to the ghost car, but I do remember being in the hills some nights and seeing a pair of headlights burn down the windy, wilderness-surrounded roads at ridiculous hours in the morning, I could only assume. One night at a Christmas party, a newer guy tried to make some connection between the ghost car and little Danny. He quickly got told to shut up and not to talk like that. He didn't work for us that long. Old age started to get the better of me towards the end of my time at Yosemite. I was liked and respected enough by those I worked with to request different roles that would align to my aging body, but that wasn't me. I didn't want to feel pampered or like I was getting special treatment. I weirdly still loved that place, even after what it had put me through. The way war numbed me to violence and the police force numbed me to confrontation, Yosemite numbed me to fear. That desire for an explanation. It did something to my mind and soul not even the other jobs could. I remember the genuine surprise and sadness of my coworkers when I said I wouldn't be working there much longer. Plenty of those folks only lasted at Yosemite because of my support, and I could say the same about a lot of them. I got a lot of cards and gifts on my last week. I really felt valued. I gave out my handshakes, hugs, and gratitude, and actually found myself feeling really emotional as I set off to leave. I know bad times never seem to be bad once you're through them, and a lot of my time at Yosemite could be put down to that. I was a 5-minute walk from the parking lot, and I decided to remind myself why this job had to end. Instead of following the road, I cut through the woods for one last walk in my office before reaching my car. It was getting dark, but it could have been midnight and I'd still have known my way around. I heard little Danny above me. It was the first time I acknowledged the sound since I first started hearing it. I had forgotten how eerie it was. At one point of the journey, I could see a slither of the hangar's tree, further down the hill, peeking through the wilderness. I was too far to hear the creaks. I can't say I wanted to. I could see the parking lot through the trees now. There was rustling all around me. It could have been animals. It could have been something else. I didn't have to care anymore. The footsteps above me faded as I shuffled between the trees and out onto the tarmac. I took one last look at the most horrifyingly beautiful place a man could work. I got in my car and set off down the road, fighting the urge to look left or right into the woods. It wasn't my job to wonder anymore. I don't know what happened in those woods. I don't know what's happening in them now. I like to think those still in them have peace and don't have to know about the ghost car or the hangar's tree. I still think about some of the things I experienced. They don't keep me up at night anymore. I just hope that if anyone I left behind gets an explanation of what's inside Yosemite National Park, they make sure I never hear it.